Welcome along to our final week of public forums here at City Bible Forum. Next week we'll meet in the smaller rooms for our discussion group. That series called Reason for Faith, but we'll tell you more about that afterwards. If you saw Paul's teaser in the email earlier in the week, you would have seen a number of comparisons between Jesus and Buffy. So he'll tell us about that, between Jesus the Saviour King and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So Paul's also linked Buffy with the real story about Easter. So we're going to read part of the Easter story in your booklet this week, as told by Luke the biographer. So we're looking at reading 7, which has on the cross on the left-hand side, and we're reading the right-hand side where it says Luke 23. I'll give you a minute to find that, because it's a little bit different from our usual handout. So you're on the page with reading 7, opposite Mr. Frederick Lowe. And as they led him away, they seized one Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, and laid on him the cross to carry it behind Jesus. And there followed him a great multitude of the people and of women who were mourning and lamenting for him. But turning to them, Jesus said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do these things when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Two others, who were criminals, were led away to be put to death with him. And when they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him, and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And they cast lots to divide his garments, and the people stood by, watching. But the rulers scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others. Let him save himself, if he is the Christ of God, his chosen one." The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." There was also an inscription over him, "This is the King of the Jews." One of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Truly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." It was now about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour, while the sun's light failed. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, calling out with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And having said this, he breathed his last. Now when the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God, saying, "Certainly this man was innocent." And all the crowds that had assembled for this spectacle, when they saw what had taken place, returned home beating their breasts. And all his acquaintances and the women who had followed him from Galilee stood at a distance watching these things.
If you're thinking about doing your master's, you might like to consider Buffy studies as an option. You could subscribe to the online international journal of Buffy studies, also called Slage. Or you might like to attend the International Conference on Buffy in Vancouver in May. They're up to number 5 now. Josh Whedon, who came up with this show Buffy, talks about the academic interest in the show in this way. "I think it's great that the academic community has taken an interest in the show. I think it's always important for academics to study popular culture, even if the thing they're studying is idiotic. Buffy, on the other hand, is, I hope, not idiotic. We think very carefully about what we're trying to say emotionally, politically, and even philosophically while we're writing it. It really is, apart from being a pop culture phenomenon, something that it's deeply layered textually, episode by episode. It's great fun to watch, so we're going to watch a clip from the show now.
There. But the blood's just pumping. But it's hot.
Don't hurt me.
Don't hurt you.
Hey, what's going on? Help me. Call the police.
Get out of here, girl.
Are you guys having a fight? Because, you know, fighting's not cool.
Get out of here.
No. No, she wants to stay. I don't mind a little appetizer.
Have you ever heard the expression, biting off more than you can chew? Okay, how about the expression, vampire slayer?
What the hell are you talking about?
Wow, never heard that one. Okay, how about, oh God, my leg, my leg?
Oh God, my leg!
See, now we're communicating. Since I met one who didn't know me. You should get home.
How'd you do that?
It's what I do.
You're just a girl.
That's what I keep saying.
Buffy is a show that's full of archetypes, characters that fit a particular mold. One of them is called the Watcher. He's the librarian mentor who does nothing, he never acts, and so he's called the Watcher. And obviously there's vampires and there's demons and there's other mythological creatures that play in the show. But one of the things that have made it interesting to academics is the way it fuses different symbols together. Buffy is a maiden. A woman of her frame would typically be the damsel in distress. But she's a fusion of the maiden, an archetypal character, and the hero. She's both at once. She's just a girl, but she also packs a punch. She's been described as post-feminist or third wave feminism, in that she is, well, she's both a brute, she has the strength of 20 men, but she's also Barbie at the same time. But in terms of bringing together seemingly incompatible archetypes, the Barbie and the Brute, Buffy has been beaten to it. Because 2,000 years before Buffy, Jesus embodied both defeat and victory in the same moment. And that's what our passage for today is about, the end of Jesus' life. The most famous part, his crucifixion. We'll pick it up from verse 33 of the passage. Verse 33 is just a way of referencing the words, and if you find the little number 33, we'll take it from there. And when they came to the place that's called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing. And they cast lots to divide his garments. And the people stood by watching, but the rulers scoffed at him, saying, He saved others. Let him save himself, if he is the Christ of God, his chosen one. The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, If you're the king of the Jews, then save yourself. There was also an inscription over him, This is the king of the Jews. Crucifixion was the ultimate death penalty in the Roman world, and it was also the ultimate way to humiliate someone. Someone was strung up, usually naked, on a tree or a specially built cross, in full view of their enemies and open to the insults and taunts of all of their critics. We have an early piece of graffiti about a Christian. It says, Alex Amenos, a local Christian, worships his God. He worships a man who's being crucified, but he's half man and half donkey. Because the very idea that a king would be crucified, or that a god would allow himself to suffer in this way, was ridiculous. But right from the beginning, Christians have been describing Jesus as both a lion, it's a picture of his strength, and a lamb, a picture of a sacrifice, a weak sacrifice. But from the beginning, Christians have been saying that his victory, his conquering, his kingship, actually came through his sacrifice. And so it's no accident that as the historian Luke records this event of Jesus' life, he puts it together with a great deal of irony. He wants us to see this event as not just his death, but his coronation. Did you notice there in verse 38, there was also an inscription over him, "This is the King of the Jews." It's irony, it's funny, because it's true. The irony is that he proves to be who he's killed for claiming to be. Well, why the sacrifice? What was the point of Jesus dying? Why the blood? What's this fixation with the blood of lambs and blood being poured out? Well, it's a question that the characters of Buffy ask as well. There's a lot of blood in Buffy. And one of the characters, he's a nice vampire, puts it this way. Blood is life, Lackbrain. Why do you think we eat it? It's what keeps you going, makes you warm, makes you other than dead. Of course it's her blood. At the end of season 5, Buffy dies in the place of her sister. And she saves the world as she does that, but she dies so that her sister can live. And in this passage, we see something similar in verse 44 to 48. Let's pick it up from verse 44. It was now about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour, when the sun's light failed. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, calling out with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And having said this, he breathed his last. Now, when the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God, saying, "Certainly, this man was innocent." And all the crowds that assembled for this spectacle, when they saw what had taken place, returned home beating their breasts. And all his acquaintances and the women who had followed him from Galilee stood at a distance, watching these things. Now, Luke paints this as a death that opens the way to God. The temple in the curtain had been the thing that had divided the imperfect people from the perfect God. If they had just entered in there by themselves, on their own terms, without a sacrifice, then they would have been struck dead. But at the moment of Jesus' death, we're told, this temple is torn in two. People are allowed into God's presence despite their imperfections, because an innocent man has died in their place. But the difference between Jesus' story and Buffy's story, of course, is that Jesus' story claims to be true. Josh Whedon might have written his story with philosophical and relational and conceptual intent, but he never claimed that this was the truth. However, this is how Luke introduces his biography. He says, "Many of us have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you've been taught." Luke was a smart man, but he took decades retraining himself as an ancient historian so that he could tell the story of Jesus, so that its hearers could have certainty. But in case we're tempted 2,000 years later to doubt just taking Luke's word for it, not only do we have corroborating evidence from Christians, we have other accounts of people who were contemporaneous with Jesus. We even have early evidence, written evidence, from non-Christians. We looked a little bit at the question of truth last week, but one of the most remarkable feats of ancient history was its ability to produce this piece of evidence. Just 20 years after Jesus, we have written evidence of this event. Thales calls this darkness an eclipse of the sun in the third book of his histories. Now, Thales was a famous pagan or Roman historian, but he tells us about Jesus, well, the blackness that came at the moment of Jesus' death. He explains it in a way that was purely material, that there must have been an eclipse at this moment. A Christian responds to it saying, well, you couldn't have had that at the moment of the Passover, that's just not the way the moon works. And then we have it recorded for us later, but historians date this within decades of this event, from both Christians like Luke, who carefully investigated everything, and from men like Thales, we have evidence that there was blackness at the moment of Jesus' death. Why? Well, darkness at the break of noon, in the Jewish understanding, had always been the judgment of God. Years before, it had been predicted that darkness would fall as God's judgment came. And this judgment falls on an innocent man, according to Luke. Well, why would Jesus do this? If Luke is right, why would Jesus allow himself to be humiliated in this way? And this is where Jesus breaks the mold. If Buffy subverted some archetypes, then Jesus smashed them. He smashed the archetype. In Buffy, the heroes are compelled by love. For example, we have one of the main characters in season 5, Anya, explaining her motivations. Now, you see, usually when there's an apocalypse, I skedaddle. But now, I love you. So much that instead I try to think of ways to fight a god and worry terribly that something might happen to you. And also worry that something will happen to me. Anya is compelled by her love for her boyfriend. Buffy is compelled by her love for her sister. Jesus is compelled by love as well, but it's love for a very different object. Look at me at verses 33 and 34 again. Verse 33. And when they came to the place that's called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Yes, Jesus is compelled by love, but he smashes the mold because he's compelled by love for his enemies, even his executioners. Imagine for a moment Buffy dying not for her sister or for her friends, but for the vampires. It hasn't happened in Buffy because it's unimaginable, isn't it? And although Jesus has been accused of being just a psychological expression of an archetype, it was unimagined before Jesus as well, which is why he smashed the mold of the hero by doing something completely new. Not just being hero and sacrifice, but sacrifice for his enemies. And it's a story that has transformed the world in ways that had not been seen before Jesus. For instance, by the 4th century, the Romans were confounded by these Christians, and the emperor writes to his pagans, these impious Galileans, or Christians, not only feed their own poor, but ours also, welcoming them into their gatherings of love. Because the Christians, for the first time, did what Jesus had taught them to do. Not just repair the soldiers who could fight again, but establish hospitals for those incapacitated for life. Show compassion to people who've been cast out because they've been born with defects. Or even give food to your enemies. Because Jesus had done something that's not just unimaginable for us to do, but something that had not been imagined prior to him. Well, I wanted to ask Greg up for a moment. Greg has become Christian in the past few years, and I was going to ask him a couple of questions. First of all, Greg, I wanted to ask you how it was that you became a follower of Jesus.
Yeah, thanks. I became a Christian about 8 years ago, and it wasn't really through a logical process that I started. I didn't really know much about the Bible. I'd gone to church as a young kid, then drifted away for about 35 years maybe. But in a whole series of circumstances, I found myself praying to a God I didn't know or understand. Just once, really. And, you know, acknowledged that I hadn't really I'd made a few mistakes, and, you know, I just really just prayed. You know, if there's any role for me, Heavenly Father, then come into my heart. And I didn't really know, I didn't notice anything. It was, you know, on a trip somewhere, and I didn't really notice anything. It wasn't like a blinding light.
Mm-hmm.
But then, over the next 12, 18 months, I guess, looking back on it, a whole series of things just started to happen. And, you know, I was still searching. I was looking at various, trying to understand what my faith was and where it was all going. And then two things happened, which I think are relevant. Here, one person at work, who I quite respected, actually just shared his faith. He didn't actually even share it, he just made it known he had a genuine faith. And because I respected him, that, you know, made a big impact on me. And then the other point was that, I'd been reading a secular, book, Power of Now, also Eckhart Tolle, which was very popular back then.
We talked about Eckhart Tolle with Oprah.
Okay, yeah. And someone who actually worked for me, so it was a pretty brave move, came up and said, look, I saw you reading that, have you ever read something like this? And gave me a book by John Dixon, which was the first time I'd ever read what I would consider an intellectual, approach to Christianity, similar to the way that Paul's sermons go. And so that sort of made me aware that you can come to faith intellectually. You know, the great thing about the Christian faith is, yes, it's a faith step, but, you know, God doesn't expect us not to use our minds. And so from that point on, you know, I realized, wow, you know, every question, every objection I've got to Christianity, I can look into, I can research. And, you know, that was about 8 years ago, and there's still an enormous amount to learn, but so I now consider myself a Christian. I'm not quite sure when, but at some point now, back about 8 years ago, I certainly became a Christian.
Okay, great. Yeah. And we're looking at Buffy studies today. You're not enrolled in Buffy studies at the moment,
no,
are you?
No, okay. Buffy was before my time.
All right, yeah.
I was telling Paul I was not a Buffy generation guy.
You mentioned the Monkees, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah,
I was upset by David
point.
Jones passing away. He was more my generation.
Yeah. But obviously you've spent some of past 8 years looking at Jesus a bit.
Yes.
What difference has Jesus made in terms of Jesus studies? What difference has Jesus made to you in your life?
There's probably three observations I'd make, and I would stress that, again, for me, it's not it's looking back that you can see it. It's not like turning a switch. It's not a blinding thing. But in three ways, I think Jesus is impacted my life. Firstly, an enormous hunger to learn as much as I can about the Bible and the Word and Jesus' life in the time available. It's not even hard. You know, the hard thing is finding the time and, incidentally, finding good teachers. You've got to, look for your good teachers, good feeding. But it's just this, without a doubt, I've got this enormous interest that came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, without going into any much detail, it certainly makes you aware of sin, and it makes you much more sensitive to what's might be slightly wrong in your own lives. But the incredible thing is, it gives you power to do something about it. Doesn't remove the issue, but it gives you the power, I found, to address it if you take that step and call upon Jesus. But you've got to, you do have to be aware of it. But it just becomes innate. And then finally, fellowship with Christians, which is the other amazing difference as I look back on my life over the last 8 years. You know, it's not just part of it's going to church, and you know, I think that that is part of being Christian, you know, finding your church. And let's face it, all our churches, no such thing as a perfect church, otherwise we'd what's the old joke?
Because they let you in.
That's right, because I let me in. If it was a perfect church, they wouldn't yet. But I guess what I'm really saying in the broader context, looking back on it, you move from this mindset where Christians are very unusual, strange people, and there's something that you just don't want to have anything to do with them, to this position where, in fact, you feel an affinity often with Christians and you understand what's driving them. You share that.
Right,
so that'd be the three things.
Thanks very much, Greg. Let's give Greg a round of applause. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Well, today is the last in our series looking at different TV shows of our time. I just wanted to encourage you with a couple of thoughts. Many people will share their own story and say that Jesus Studies has had an even bigger impact on their lives than Buffy Studies has. And I don't know where you're at in your investigation of Jesus or your finding out about him, but Jesus does invite us to respond to him as people. He might invite us to have a look at this week that changed the world over Easter. I have a read of the story of his last week and the difference that it's made in people's lives. Or you might be further along in your investigations of Jesus. You might want to join a discussion group that's happening just in the meeting room next door over the next 5 weeks, which is based on Luke's entire biography, because the best reason for faith is the life of Jesus. And so we'll be looking at his entire life as compiled by Luke. But Jesus also invites us to talk to him, as Greg did, and to respond to him by saying sorry and thank you and please. So this won't be for everyone, but if you're at the point today where you'd like to respond to Jesus by speaking to him, I'm going to lead us in a prayer on those three things, saying sorry for our imperfections and the mistakes we've made in his world, saying thank you for the darkness that fell on him, the sacrifice that he made, and saying, please forgive me, just like you forgave even your executions. So if you'd, at the end of this series, if you'd like to join with me in prayer now, you don't need to say anything, just in the silence of your head. If you want to say, yes, I agree, then you can just think amen at the end. Let me lead us in prayer. Dear God, we are sorry for the mistakes that we've made in your world. And we are sorry for them because we see the consequences that they can have. Thank you for Jesus' death, that an innocent man died in the place of the guilty. And we ask that you'll please forgive us for the things that we've done wrong, and that we might be able to follow in Jesus' footsteps. Amen. Well, you'll find comment cards, you'll find a few things in your handouts today. Some information about our next series of City Bible Forum. The next series of City Bible Forum won't start here. It'll be across in the Wesley Church on the 3rd of May. That's the origin of the species. Where does life come from? You'll also find a postcard in there about the discussion group starting up next week. I don't think the truth has anything to be afraid of. Whatever your doubt, whatever your question is, it'll be welcome in that forum. And the third thing is a comment card. If you'd like to use that to communicate with us in any way, you can just leave it in the blue box by the door. Thanks for being part of this series, and I look forward to seeing you at Origin of the Species.